The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
And it's the Anton Savage Show, 53106 at a cost of 30 cents. If you want to get in touch, 087 1400 106 on WhatsApp. With me is Paul Gallagher, Chief Executive of the Irish Hotels Federation, and Brenda Power, columnist with the Sunday Times and the Irish Daily Mail, and surprisingly a remarkable expert on Toblerones we established during the break. Some revelations we may come to later if we have time, Brenda. Before that, front page of one of your own papers, thousands of new homes at risk as Irish water cannot connect them. This is sort of phase two of the housing crisis, because you have talked about this on this programme before, that whatever about actually getting the houses built, the second issue will be getting enough infrastructural support in the form of water, electricity, rail connections, playgrounds, all the rest of it, to actually make viable communities.
And water obviously being possibly the most significant. And Bord Pleanála cannot grant planning permission for new homes without a signed declaration from the utility company that it can connect the site to the water supply. And basically what they're saying is, we just do not have the capacity. I think they require something like 60 billion expenditure to acquire the capacity to meet the housing proposals, you know, the required number of housing to meet the targets by 2030. The spokesman for the Uisce Éireann in the Greater Dublin area says, our studies have shown that the non-domestic demand East and Midlands region is expected to grow by 73% and the population is forecast to rise by 24% by 2050. Essentially, we're relying on an infrastructure developed for 500,000 people serving a population three times that size and growing. So without the water, so that is, I mean, it's not just a question of build, which we're always being told. Lay the water pipes first. The sewage and the water is essential. And that's not, the money is not.
Those figures are remarkable. An infrastructure designed for 500,000 serving 1.5 million.
Yeah. And growing, and a growing population, and it not being expanded.
And all we need to do, Paul, is find 60 odd billion and we can fix this problem.
Yeah, I think that's really what Gerry Grant from Irish Water, I think he's quoted as saying, that it's, the system is in a desperate state because of extraordinary complacency and passive indifference. I mean, I don't know how he got on when he got off that programme or off that platform. I'm sure the Minister for the Environment probably called him in to have a few words, or certainly the Secretary General went and rang him and said, you can't behave like that in public. But it's clear the Greater Dublin Area Drainage Scheme has been stuck in planning since 2019. It should have been built and ready by 2023, and it's still in planning. So there's a real
problem. Is that the scheme bringing water from the Shannon, or is that separate?
Yes, it's the drainage scheme. It's the scheme to allow us to increase the amount of effluent that we are treating in order for it to be passed into the sea and so on. But it's incredible, because what we find at the end of all of this is that many of our big issues in Irish society are actually planning based, or on Bord Pleanála based. So between housing, wind farms, connectivity, faster rail, a dart to the airport. All of these things seem to be absolutely stuck in glue in on Bord Pleanála.
And taking, I mean, not just within on Bord Pleanála, but the system generally, you take the last one where you look at the rail connection to the airport, that has been enthusiastically mooted now for 25 years?
Yeah, it has. I mean, we have great road infrastructure at the airport. Why don't we do something like the States? Put a train up on an elevated platform the whole way. Why do we have to go down underneath the ground all the time? Let's raise the thing. And that'll be far quicker to build. You watch Japanese companies constructing whole bridges over a two-day weekend. We simply don't seem to have the wherewithal to actually crack on and get things done here.
I agree with you. I've never understood why that has to be an underground.
I mean,
they were able to run a tram through College Green. Could they not run one out, the M1, the M50, out
put
to,
it up
to
on
Dublin
stilts.
Airport?
Run it out there.
Or along the central median, or whatever you need to do. But, I mean, it is absolutely absurd that we're the only capital city, only large city in Europe without a rail link.
Yeah.
I mean, you feel so sorry for tourists. You see them, I'm sure you meet this all the time, Paul, landing at Dublin Airport and asking, you know, how do I get into the city centre? Can I use my credit card to tap onto the bus? No, you can't. You've got to go back in, find a newsagent, buy a Leap card, and then you come out and the bus you were about to get on is gone. I mean,
whatever about that specific one infrastructural challenge, what do you attribute the cause for all of our apparent incapacity to get anything through planning and actually construct it? Because that's what Irish Water is saying, is that we're now lagging, I mean, for the kind of infrastructural changes here, 15, 20 years. in some of the programmes, and yet nothing done.
So during the week was a Jack Chambers saying that they're no longer going to allow objections to planning on the basis of the character of the area. It does seem that a lot of what has been holding it up has been the use of the planning system to object to developments. I just see a line here saying last month Taoiseach Simon Harris told the Mail he would withhold funding from Irish Water until it showed how he could help the state to deliver more housing. Is this not a kind of a chicken and egg situation? Surely you need to give them the money to develop the infrastructure so that you can have the housing. Since you can build the housing, you need the water first. Is that not the whole point of this?
We've had a housing crisis now for, I would think, more than a decade.
Yeah.
And government after government, and we would have the homeless people living in hotels, wholly on inappropriate place. Yeah. And for the last decade, we have been saying we're going to upscale, up-ramp the development of houses and homes, apartments and so on. All I can see happening is it's getting more delayed and more delayed. The costs are rising. And when we do eventually get to some moment in time, it'll be a magic moment if it ever happens, that we have enough housing. We won't have any ability to pay for the house that's been built because we'll all be now locked into rent because we simply couldn't afford the capital outlay.
Yeah.
But where do you lay either blame or responsibility to resolve this? Because the fact that we have a capacity for big programs and projects to get mired in bureaucracy for decades on end, that, I assume, can't be let stand.
I think the main reason we have this issue is I don't think those in power understand what a crisis is or how they're going to get out of it. And I think perhaps, you know, the permanent government, and that is all of our civil servants, do a great job, are really too cocooned and don't really see it either. And there's just this sort of thing about managing everybody. And if we say all these nice words, it soothes everybody in the media. We'll get a minister to a building site and it'll be a great photo op. Unfortunately, this is an absolute crisis. Mm. This is probably as big a crisis I can think of because you're hearing now last week the FDI, all of the major companies are now talking. The key issue that's on their horizon right now is not the tariff, it's housing. They're saying it. We're saying it. We're saying for far too long. But there should be a task force, and I think the legislation should be changed around the planning system in order to develop private dwelling spaces or homes or apartments, and let's get on and do the job.
Yeah, as Paul says, it is a crisis. And when you look at how we were able to respond to COVID, you know, civil liberties were overruled, infrastructural changes were made because we declared it a crisis. That is what needs to happen now. You know, so, you know, I'm sorry, you cannot object to new houses being built beside you because they might overlook your kitchen or because they change the character of the area or because, you know, the density or whatever, or the unfortunate slugs may not survive. Do you know what I mean? We have to treat this as a crisis. And as soon as you do, then you kind of overrule all the objections.
Oh, but I can hear people already saying, but the rights of the individual, the property rights not to be subsumed by the state, the individual civil rights, the due process that should be required, all of those things can't stand as naught, can they?
But we were able to do that during COVID. I mean, can you imagine
we're not talking about people's civil liberties. Yeah. I mean, the only person I can recall referring to this as a housing crisis was Michael D. Higgins. And I think he probably got a slap from government for that.
I think many have termed it such. I'm just not sure that the response even matches the terminology.
No, we need saying, a crisis response.
Why doesn't the minister take planning appeals back from on board Pranola and just make executive orders to get houses, wind farms, roads, drainage, etc. built? Although people of a certain age, Brenda, will remember there was a time when that used to happen and it didn't work well.
Well, yes, I know. But I mean, I still think that there is no sense of urgency about this, and that is a problem. And as you say, Paul, you know, the cocooned permanent government, the transient, you know, elected government, they really don't seem to have a sense of how this is affecting everything. I mean, everything from, for instance, you say immigration. You know, you heard the Minister for Justice recently saying that a lot of people coming here are economic migrants. They probably are. If they had a housing, if they had the ability to rent and work here, they probably wouldn't need to come.
This is why we need water charges and other, and yet we still have people
we do have
demand
water charges.
unlimited, not domestic, commercial, certainly pay through. And yet we still have people demand unlimited, unmetered water and expect the taxpayer to pay for it. And on the same note, in relation to the airport connection, there should be a free loop bus from Dublin Airport to College Green. Living in the West, they have these electric buses doing a loop. Nobody's using them. Move them to Dublin. Another on the a tram wouldn't have the frequency or capacity to serve the airport in relation to the metro.
It would be better than nothing, which is what we have at the moment, I would have thought.
What we need in Ireland is joined up thinking in everything to do with houses, health, travel, etc. 53106 at a cost of 30 cents if you want to get in touch, or 087-1400-106. And Andy, we will be talking more about planning in about half an hour, because Ryanair Chief Executive Eddie Wilson will be with us to talk about the challenges in respect of the Dublin Airport cap, which of course, oddly, is a planning matter because it's for Fingal County Council to ultimately make that decision. Just at the point where we thought the story was, as a story, gone and over, it turns out there is still life in the battle between RTE and Ryan Tubridy. The Irish Times is reporting that Tubridy and his agent, Noel Kelly, are seeking internal documentation from RTE about the sort of discussions and reaction that RTE had when it ended up at loggerheads with Ryan Tubridy over the false declaration of total earnings by the station. Mm-hmm. It looks like at this point, according to the Irish Times, RTE are about 100 grand in hock for legal fees thus far.
And I'd say counting when you see that they have hired very high level Arthur Cox solicitors who wouldn't come cheap, and Tubridy and Kelly have Hayes solicitors, so it's definitely both lawyered up. So this would seem to be a precursor to some kind of legal action, all right, from possibly Tubridy and Kelly. At the moment, they are looking for discovery or disclosure of personal data, any data relating to him that is held by RTE. And
so what is this, minutes of meetings or internal memos?
Documents,
or
memos,
personal
text,
documentation.
Yeah, anything that mentions him, I would have thought. Now, apparently they're a bit of a dispute over what level of, or what documents will be covered by the disclosure. There are some limited exceptions. They can hold back some. But it sounds like it's going to be a right ding-dong over whatever they've got, and the potential apparently to embarrass RTE executives. You know, because obviously exchanges between them, you never know what it might throw up. The piece by Colm Keane draws kind of an interesting kind of a comparison with the Nigel Farage case in the UK, where he was refused, his account was closed by Coutts Bank, and they said it was for commercial reasons, but he sought personal data, and they discovered that it was actually, they were concerned by the reputational risk of having him as a client. So you never know what this might throw up, it's basically.
And of course, there are certain rights under European legislation to any data pertaining to you. So it's a matter now of deciding what fits within those boundaries, I assume.
You're entitled to see what personal information a body holds about you.
And RTE is quoted in the piece as saying, RTE has received data access requests from both parties. I assume this is Ryan Tubridy and Noel Kelly. These require a significant amount of work that we are currently processing. The end result of this, Paul, is it's hard to see how both Tubridy and Kelly could take it much further without risking whatever victory they may have also harming them in the public mind. Or is there a clean win here for the two of them, do you think?
Well, I don't know what's in the documents, but if I was betting, I'd say RTE are the ones with most exposure probably here. Mm. I think Brenda makes that point about, you know, we don't know what sort of communications were going on between the executive team at an RTE at that time, or even, in fact, board communications at the time also. I mean, at the time...
Do you want to breathe life into the whole thing again?
Well, you see, there is probably a financial settlement to be won here, because just like Nigel Farage, he was able to prove, and funny enough, Dame Alison Rowe, who was the CEO of Coutts Bank, had to step down. There was a financial settlement made to Farage based on whatever was in those communications that he happened to be allowed to see. And I think RTE are probably on the same tightrope right now.
And so there's been a sharp rise in the use of data access in litigation and employment disputes in recent years. Such requests could produce material for use in legal proceedings or for use in public relations activity. So I imagine that whenever they get their hands on this, they will look through it and see if there's anything they could usefully maybe share with the wider public.
What about the downside risk, though, of it has now been, what, a year since? I mean, it got to the point with the RTE scandal and Ryan Tubridy's payments that we began to get texts of people saying, just please let it end. I can't bear any more of it. Then it went away and it seemed to have... This does get the whole ball rolling again, though, doesn't it?
It may not go that far. If there's enough dirty stuff there, RTE will just settle with Ryan Tubridy and it'll all go away. I think that's what probably happen here.
It depends on what his objective is, I suppose.
Reinstatement?
I don't know. Or maybe just revenge.
Tex saying on the, we were talking earlier on about the infrastructure issues, saying the tram would be better than nothing is really the Irish mentality to everything. Instead of building something that's better than nothing, let's build something that'll do the job properly so we don't have to spend Dublin 10 years upgrading the project.
Just put something,
that in your pipe and smoke it,
Brenda. A train out to the airport. Can we not do that? Every other country in Europe has it.
A text saying, Anton, I love your guests. I am a lowly engineer who has been trying to deliver infrastructure for 20 years. The number one cause is our political legal system. Basically, when we try to build energy or water projects, the crowds gather to object and the support vanishes. And I assume that means the political support for the project. No. Houses aren't the issue. Water and power lines. That's the issue. And another simple answer to all Ireland's problems, our leaders don't have enough vision. 53106, if you want to get in touch, or 087 1400 106. During the week, Conor McGregor, presidential candidate, sat down with Tucker Carlson, the man fired from Fox News for his role in costing Fox News $748 million in a libel settlement against Dominion and the voting machine manufacturer in the US. And they sat down to talk about the state of the nation. And the Irish Independent today has done a fairly good breakdown of the take on all of that. In Conor McGregor's view, we face problems ranging from Wexford having no hotels because they are filled with international protection applicants, and people taking their own lives because of having their tax checked.
Because of the traffic corps. Yes, that's right. That he doesn't know how many people have taken their own lives because they've been harassed, as he clearly feels that he has, having multiple road traffic offence convictions by the guards. It's kind of mad stuff. Now, I just saw a clip of it where he's talking about his potential presidential candidacy, and he's explaining to Tucker Carlson, who's kind of feigning this astonishment. First of all, clearly Tucker Carlson either believes or pretends to believe that we're talking about an actual head of government that he's running for in the same capacity as President Trump. He's saying, so what you're saying, that you may not be allowed to run? He said, no, I need the backing of four local authorities or 20 members of the Oireachtas. And you may not get that. No, I may not. Oh my God, do you have a democracy in Ireland at all? I mean, it is absolutely mad stuff. It really is. And as well as that, he's complaining about, obviously, his usual sort of talking points, immigration and Ireland's gone to the dogs, and it's not the country that people knew it to be. So I don't know.
Really. Well, what do you say? Well, on that topic of the manner in which it has gone to the dogs, he asserts this thing about the international protection applicants and the numbers that are being housed in hotels around the country. And he says that there are now no available hotels at all in Wexford because they're all filled with asylum seekers. As president of the Hotels Federation, you can give us the data on that.
Yeah, that's not true. I think that's the answer. I mean, these are Conor McGregor's playbook, just like Trump. Mm. The alternate facts. I think you remember Trump's first inauguration. It was the biggest crowd ever, period. You know, and then the photographs didn't show that. There are lots of hotels available in Wexford. In the White House, when he was there, I think he referred to whole towns being overrun. The population had been overtaken by the number of international arrivals. That was also found to be untrue. You know, I think, like everything, if you don't have facts, but you can invent facts that make the story sound credible, so why not just go ahead and reach for those? And that's what he's doing here, reaching for his version of what's going on.
And rather significant facts were overlooked, I think, in relation to Conor McGregor that were not mentioned at all.
What's Tucker Carlson's objective in this? Why fly over and do this interview? Is it just eyeballs, or is it part of a bigger agenda? What does he get from this?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, I think he said in the introduction, he said, you're probably the best known Irishman in the world. He's certainly the best known Irishman.
Say Rory McIlroy might be in and around that.
Although that's how Carlson introduced him. He'd certainly be one of the best known in the United States. So maybe it's just eyeballs and stir it up, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I presume, you know, Tucker Carlson get a large audience for this particular program. It serves, you know, Tucker Carlson wouldn't be unopposed to what's
Americans
going on with
care
Trump.
About the, is it that there's enough of an Irish diaspora to make Americans
think everything in life, if enough of this nonsense goes on, people become desensitized to it. And maybe we're on this sort of, you know, this far right sort of road now where, say what you like, become notorious for it. Yeah. Someone else then agrees with you is also in a position of either popularity or power. And that gives your common credibility. And all of a sudden, there's a, you know, people start to coalesce around, well, these guys are actually talking my language, because a lot of people are very fed up because of planning and no houses and no water and no roads and no schools and no whatever else. Mm-hmm. And really, at the end of the day, if our government were more alert to this and had realised there was a crisis, we wouldn't have people complaining about people staying in hotels, because there would be a house.
Yeah.
So this whole thing is circular. Yeah.
What about the presidential ambitions then? Because he outlines the democratic process by which you get elected, where you get four county councils or 20 members of the Oireachtas. And it seems that what he's saying in that is that he believes he doesn't have a prayer. So does that mean the presidential ambitions are gone?
Well, I don't know. I mean, he didn't say that they were, and he didn't say that he was actually, you know, intent on following it through. I suppose I'm no doubt that he is probably making contact with members of the Oireachtas and local authorities. And you never know, I suppose. You may get people who will say, well, look, in the interest of democracy, isn't it better that he runs and is defeated than that we allow him to play the martyr on the international stage and say, you know, I'm a well-known Irish man, here are my views, and here is the reason that I'm being silenced by my own
country.
But
the only way to, following his own logic, though, the only way to allow him to run is to change the system so that it's a different, because he is allowed to run. Anybody's allowed to run. As long as you're, 35, natural-born, have at it. Go call some county councils.
But he needs, once he needs the backing of the local authorities. Well, we're not going to do that to allow, but I think we're going to change the constitution to allow Conor McGregor to run.
Well, let's keep our options open.
But I mean, I think it would, personally, think it would be a very dangerous tactic to say, look, somebody will support him, or let's give him the support so that he can be defeated. We saw with the Monk, support that you can't bank on that going the way you want it to go.
The text saying, in relation to housing, there are a lot of misconceptions. One, not everyone can live in Dublin. Two, too many people think they can, and as a result, Dublin prices are high. Three, too many young people don't have any concept of saving to buy a house. Four, I have two sons, one 38, the other 43. Five, one bought his house in Dublin, age 33. Six, the other bought his house in Monaghan, age 34. Seven, both paid 350 to 400 grand. Eight, how did they do this? Simple, both of them are savers.
Yeah, look, I mean, saving is a very important part of growing up. You're always going to need some money to fall back on. But I have two daughters, and I know they think right now about housing that they'll never be able to afford to live anywhere near where I live. They'll have to live some far-flung town around Ireland. They'll have to drive to work. And all of a sudden now what we have is the schools that they would like to put kids into are here in Dublin. The public transport doesn't connect in the same way as, you know, capital bus services and so on. And we're going to have longer days working to pay mortgages,
but
and
this,
longer days working
this
to drive to
Texter's core
work.
Point, though, is that same applies in London, same applies in New York.
Years
same
ago, I think he said. I mean, houses are far more expensive now than they were 8 years ago, and growing.
But is that not a function of economic success? That when you look at capital cities around the world in economically successful countries, these are the norms. Not everybody gets to live in the capital because it's expensive.
The whole system here is broken. You could say that there is a ration on the number of houses being built. That, and who is that entirely serving? It's certainly not serving the people who have to buy these houses. It is a broken system. It is time to fix it. And I think if we don't, what will happen is Conor McGregor is a bit of a lightning rod for the far right. They will run far more candidates in the next general election of people who are absolutely dissatisfied with what's going on. We'll have more TDs in the Dáil who will be more centre-right or far-right. They will then give 20 votes to Conor McGregor on the next time we have a presidential election, and all of a sudden this is just going to look different.
But isn't that also the avocado toast argument? Do you remember that from a few years ago? If modern 20-somethings weren't spending so much money on their coffees and their avocado toast, they would be able to save for a house. But I mean, that again is a circular argument. Well, I know I'll never be able to afford a house. I may as well have a nice breakfast.
I think that's unfair.
Guys, thank you. Brenda Power, columnist of the Sunday Times and Irish Daily Mail. Paul Gallagher, chief executive of the Irish Hotels Federation.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.